Welcome to episode 12 of the Over the Counter podcast. I'm Mark Giesecheck.
And I'm Andrew Whaley.
Today we're going to talk about something, that maybe you wouldn't think of, and that is make your own fun, or how to make your own fun.
I am my own fun.
Oh, well, I know. You're a one-person party, Andrew. What can I say?
You just said it.
I did.
It is true.
So this is kind of an odd thing about our age, but we have an incredible amount of leisure time compared to previous ages of humanity, I do believe. However, that leisure time is almost completely filled by staring at screens that have little pixels shooting light back at us, namely televisions, tablets, phones, computers, whatever. And we don't really seem to do a lot of the things that we used to do in terms of making our own fun. We tend to want to just sit in front of a screen and let somebody else make something fun for us.
Oh, did you say something? I was checking Facebook. I didn't.
So, I think there are maybe two dimensions to the sort of cultural shift that's happened. One is, I think we used to have a lot less leisure time.
Right.
When our great-great-grandfathers were working really hard on the farm, I think they worked more hours than we typically do. Right, they didn't have long weekends and evenings.
I mean, the 40-day work week is kind of a modern invention,
yeah.
and it's like you have even if you're working in a factory in industrialized
you're still working
a lot more hours, and you have to walk to get there back or something with pre cars and
so,
or use public transit.
So even just the idea of having a lot of leisure time is novel.
Mm-hmm.
It's new. It's a new cultural trend. However, there are lots of people that want to capitalize on that leisure time by putting stuff in front of our eyeballs that we will pay them money for.
Or someone else will pay them money for to put things in front of our eyeballs, like with advertising.
However, so, yeah. All of that fits together. So,
money is exchanging hands for the sake of our eyeballs.
Right. And But then the second part of this, though, is that when people did have leisure time before the invention of radio and TV and all of that, they did things that we don't do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's worth talking about what those things are and how – so I guess there's two dimensions to the conversation. One is, what do we do with this idea of having all this leisure time? Is that good for us?
Yeah.
Et cetera. And then how are we using the leisure time that we do have versus the way our great-great-grandparents did?
Yeah, and it's – well, okay. I think it's good to have the option to have – I think that having the option to choose how to spend your time and having less hours that you're forced into, I mean, that's a good thing. And in some ways, I'm all for, you know, us – you know, I'm glad that I don't have to build a fire to cook in a stove or to stay warm. I like fires. I do it sometimes. I've stayed at a monastery one time, and you had to light a fire every time you wanted hot water for a shower.
Wow.
I mean, you had to, like, go in. It was just gas. You just turned it on and spark it. You know, but it didn't have a pilot light or anything. You just turned it on, and you have to turn it on, light a little match and light it, and then go back to your room and read for a while and wait for the water to heat up and hope no one went in and got your water. And even that was kind of annoying. It took time consuming. So, I mean, I think that's good. The question is whether or not what we're doing with that time is more human and better for us, and whether or not we're losing something by letting some of those other activities go.
I love how you always use human as an adjective and never as a noun.
I use it as a noun. I do tend to use person as a noun, but more than human. But human is, it's a noun and an adjective. Okay, wow. Humane. Humane sounds like, oh, we're not going to beat the dog or something. We're going to treat him in a humane manner. But human is a perfectly good adjective.
Okay, well, but
it's a human life, right? That's an adjective. It's not a zebra life.
Okay, so along those lines, I think that you would say something like, it is more human to sing a song than listen to an MP3. Or it's more human to put on a play than to watch a TV show.
I mean, I'm saying that's a question to be asked. I haven't
those sorts of things.
Yeah, I think that that's the question at odds here.
So let me just kind of bring out one aspect of this that kind of throws this. So if we're going to say, well, it's better to go watch a play than to watch a movie, or it's better to interact with real people than watch a television show, I really have a lot of sympathy for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, if you're going to say, well, it's better to go watch live sports than to watch sports on television, right? The difficulty here becomes, well, what if you live in a rural area and the only live sports are the basketball game at the local high school that only has 200 kids and they really stink? And the basketball isn't very fun to watch because the players aren't very skilled because they're all 14 years old.
Or
versus watching the NBA on your DirecTV satellite dish, and you can watch the best basketball players in the world duke it out.
Or even better, whether or not I'm going to go down to what is that? Sports Authority Stadium at Mile High. I mean, it used to be Mile High Stadium, but and watch the Broncos.
Sure.
Or I fired up on my big screen that's like a mile and a half away from the stadium. I could go down there, but then I got to find parking and walk all the way down.
And you have to pay an arm and a leg.
Pay an arm and a leg and sit in some little uncomfortable seat with a guy that's drunk and spilling his beer next to me or whatever. I could be watching this and cooking something to eat that night at the same time. It's so, I mean, this isn't a real simple, like, hard, fast thing. As far as plays versus film, I personally greatly prefer film. But I think there's something that we've lost, and I've been doing it more here lately, is going and watching film communally in a theater. The problem is it's just gotten so expensive.
Right.
And I can rent it for a buck from the Redbox or $4 from Apple.
Right.
And or I can spend $10. But, you know, there's something to be said for going to a big epic film that someone spent a bunch of time on and sitting in a room and kind of feeling the mass of emotion. That's a pretty human event. I mean,
okay, so just another example kind of along these lines. Most typical community theater companies or whatever are not super impressive.
Mm-hmm.
To see really good theater is actually pretty hard to find. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? In Colorado, there's the great example of the Colorado Shakespeare Festival every summer in Boulder, which I've been to once. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The actors are amazing. That's not my typical experience of theater, though.
No, there's a lot of good theater in Denver. I mean, I've seen beautiful theater, and there's great symphonies and all this stuff. But what we're talking about more is like what happens in day-to-day life. And then, let's use the example that started this conversation between you and I over coffee, was people don't have hands, because we just started a new exhibit in the shop, and we have all these new paintings by people that I know.
Right.
From the local scene, all these images of John Paul II and inspired by John Paul II or John the 23rd for the new exhibit in the cafe. And so we were talking about, you know, it's like people don't have – one of the paintings, it's not there anymore, but on the original night, one of the paintings hangs in my living room. It belongs to my roommate. And we were talking about, you know, people don't really have original art. They don't make it anymore and they don't buy it.
Right.
They don't commission a portrait.
Right.
They don't have actual art in their home anymore. They have prints,
right,
or something that they kind of faked themselves because they saw it in a magazine, and it's like an abstract thing with a line because it matched the decor or something. You know, it's not. We don't see great paintings.
I mean, this is also one of those weird tensions, though, because like you could go to your like local flea market or even your local art gallery and buy something by a local artist, right? For most people, to afford something, you probably have to buy at the flea market, not at the art gallery, right? And bring that home and put on your wall. Or you could find your favorite painting by your favorite master artist from Western history on art.com or another one of those websites, have it printed on canvas and framed and put that up in your house.
No, I mean, I understand both sides of the coin. I recently talked to Elizabeth Zelasco, and I asked her to give me a price on doing a copy of Our Lady of Częstochowa. I wanted an original icon. I wanted Our Lady of Częstochowa. And she gave me a price on it, and she was probably giving me the friend price, but it's still, I thought it was incredibly reasonable for how much time and effort and love it takes to put something together. And I think that there's the other side of that. I could have fewer things hanging in my house, but a friend of mine who has this incredible talent could feed their kids and have a living. You know, is that something we want to support in our society? You know, but then the general thing is that going back to the home, we talked about how, leaving the symphony aside, people used to make music in their homes. You said there'd be a piano in every home. You meant is one of the
right.
There'd be a piano in every bar,
that
for
is
that
a great
matter.
Example. Right. There was a piano in every bar, every hotel, every home, every church, and there were a lot of people that knew how to play piano. It was one of like the central things. But what's interesting about it, though, it was a communal activity, right? So So meaning it wasn't just that somebody sat down and started playing piano. It was that they played songs that everybody knew mm-hmm. and everybody sang along with the piano player. So we're not talking about like high, like, you know, Shostakovich, you know, Chekhov type. Not Chekhov. Who's the Russian composer I'm trying to think of?
Rachmaninoff,
yes. Or Chopin or something, right? We're not talking about that. Yeah. I'm talking about like playing like Civil War songs, right? And people are singing those, right? Soldiers and stuff in the bar are singing these songs, patriotic songs or whatever, folk songs. That used to just kind of be part of the warp and woof of what we did. You know, people came together and sang.
You know, and it's funny.
And the songs were singable, right? You didn't need crazy technology to produce them.
I had a great experience 2 years ago at the New York Encounter for CL. We went to Tiernan Oak, which is this little Irish pub right next to the Manhattan Center there and on 8th and 31st. And there's a little Irish band playing, this little three-piece band playing traditional Irish songs. One of the songs that's a big – CL, the Charism, there's a lot of singing. They sing them together, all these – some of the songs I think are kind of silly, but they sing these great songs, and singing is a huge thing, right? And one of those songs is The Fields of Athenry, which is like a traditional Irish song, and it's a very tragic-sounding song. But so we go to Tiernan Og after it was all done, and this little Irish band is used to just sitting in the corner playing these Irish songs, and everyone's talking and drinking Guinness, and they played The Fields of Athenry, and suddenly there's like 150 people singing at the top of their lungs along with them in this bar, and that used to be common in pubs, singing, right?
Right.
And so this Irish pub... Something that is typical of an Irish pub that never happens in Irish pubs anymore happened, and it took the place over, and they just kept extended the song, and they knew all the little things you throw in between the verses and the yells and the motions and all this stuff, and they just kept extending it because they enjoyed it so much, and they got done and everyone cheered, and the little Irish guy comes to the microphone and he says something along the lines of, well, who the hell are you guys? I just couldn't believe, like, what just happened? You know, so there's and then I get that same experience because my roommates play music. I play music some. Perry, that works in the shop, that played the other night.
Well, okay, so
he'll come over and we sit around and play.
Now, the only experience that most Americans have had is just like going to a baseball game at the very beginning, the national anthem, right? And it used to be, like my dad's generation, everybody sang along.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think people do it as much anymore, but still a little bit, right?
I grew up with people singing along.
Yeah,
I sing.
I think it probably depends on which stadium you're at, as to whether people are singing or not. But that's probably the only kind of communal singing experience we have in a kind of civic context, right? That's not church.
You know, and it's interesting because you have those civic things that we're only used to in a religious environment now.
Like saying the Pledge of Allegiance
I have this situation where very rarely do I end up in a situation where I have to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
But as a grown man, having studied political philosophy and all this, and the history of this, you know, knowing what the revolution's about and all this stuff, I put my hand over my heart and I say, by the time I get to... And to the republic for which it stands, I kind of start choking up a little bit. I'm just like, it's something we don't do. I mean, a public communal pledge.
Yeah.
You know, we're taking an oath. We're pledging allegiance to this thing, you know. That's what song, that's civic singing, you know. But even outside of the civic, outside of the ballpark, even just in the home, we don't craft, we don't make, we don't fashion, we hardly even cook anymore.
Okay, so another example of this is games,
right?
Card games, board games, other parlor games is another great example.
Like so, Grand Theft Auto, is it?
Well, I mean, it's just interesting, right? To just think of the evolution of the games that take place in our living room. So it used to be people played parlor games. I mean, not everybody, but in Victorian England and whatever, they had these funny little games that you would play when you had a little party at your house that adults would play, right? These are not children's games most of the time.
Yeah, you know, okay, I'm going to go on the record about the parlor games thing, because I'm from a people that still does that.
Okay.
Like, I don't know what it is about it. It seems like if you graduate from Thomas Aquinas College and you end up with a house, when people come over, you got to play Mafia. I hate playing Mafia.
Well, yeah, I guess that's a parlor game, but that's not exactly what I'm thinking of.
Or like anything like that kind of, hey, let's play this, let's play that. I'm like, but you know me, I'm addicted to conversation. My default mode.
You can't stop talking.
My exactly. default mode of
Which is
engagement,
why you make a great partner on a podcast.
A glass of wine in a conversation is the best game for me in my house. I ban games in my house.
Okay, so parlor games is one thing, but then card games is another, right? Card games have been around for a long time.
Yeah, I love playing cards.
The ancient Romans played dice and stuff, and I don't know if they had the same kind of cards and stuff we do, but you know, card games have been really popular in the United States.
Now that's a family thing for us. I mean, my mom's side loves gin.
It used to be something
gin.
You did at the bar, right? If you just put yourself back in an old Western, right, you got the guy sitting at the piano playing music.
Right.
You have the cowboy sitting around the table playing cards, poker, right? I mean, and
you've dancing
got,
ladies.
And you've got people drinking, yeah. right? So there's like, I mean, there's all sorts of things going on in that environment that, although they might not be in their absolute pristine, most wonderful state
right.
in an old West tavern, they're there, right? And if you go to, I mean, even if you just think about like, go to like, I won't use that word. If you go to a coffee shop nowadays.
Oh, wow. You almost said the S word, didn't you?
I thought you should commend me for restraining
myself. I do.
Myself.
I commend thou for thy yeah. restraint
okay.
and not using
so
the S word.
If you go to a coffee shop nowadays, a lot of times you're not going to see people having these dynamic conversations and you're going to see somebody with a tablet, somebody with a Kindle,
yeah.
somebody with a laptop. And they're all kind of separated from one another. There's nobody with a piano.
Right.
Nobody's singing.
Well,
nobody's playing poker.
There are
and nobody's drinking.
There are coffee houses with pianos, and I'm 100% against pianos and coffee houses because you're trying to read or have a conversation, and every idiot that knows the beginning of some old Motley Crue song or somebody's kid runs over there and starts banging on the thing, and it just gets out of hand. But,
so piano's better with alcohol than with coffee is what you're saying?
Well, yeah, because then you don't really mind. You know, but in general, I'll tell you an interesting story. There's and I was just in this coffee house this last January, Cafe Grumpy, I think, the one in Chelsea, pulled the plug on the internet, and it made national headlines.
Huh.
Because there were so many people, and I see now why they did it. It's a pretty small shop. There's limited seating. People were coming in and camping out, and there was no place to sit.
Yeah.
And people were just staying there working, and people use coffee houses as adjunct offices.
Right.
And so they pulled the plug on the internet, and there was no a sign went up, no laptops allowed, phone use should be taken outside. And I read an article about it from one of the regulars, and one of the regulars said, yeah, no, I kind of pissed this off. And then, you know, business went down for a while, and that's what the barista said. And then business kind of came back up again. And then this regular said, and then I saw something happen that I hadn't seen in a while. People started actually talking to each other.
Right.
And that's near and dear to my heart, is the coffee house being a place where people have conversation.
Okay, but conversation is one kind of fun, right? There are multiple kinds of fun that you can make.
It's the prime amount, the prime kind of fun. It's the prime analogate.
I don't know. So let me just explore the whole.
There's nothing more addictive than ideas.
Let's talk about games for a second, right? So whether it be parlor games, card games, board games, right? Board games were really popular, especially in the 70s and 80s, maybe.
Yeah.
As a kind of like family fun activity, there's something about playing a game that is more natural than staring at a phone. But there's something also about it that's a little unnatural, right?
Right.
It just makes me think of this time I was in the coffee shop at Ave Maria College way back when, talking to this priest, Father Pat, who was the boxing coach at University of Michigan for like 25 years. Real tough English guy. Anyway, so we're talking, right? And these guys come up to us and say, hey, do you all want to play this board game with us? And he says, board games are for people who don't know how to have a decent conversation.
Is he still alive?
Yeah, he's still alive.
Okay, A, I want to interview him.
Okay.
And B, I'm calling dibs on promoting his cause after he goes. Because that is my kind of guy. Right there. I think that.
But don't you think board games are better than staring at your phone?
Well, yeah. I mean, maybe. It depends on what.
Posts?
Well, it depends on what's going on with your phone, and depends on which kind of Facebook post you're making on whose wall. I mean, if you're engaged in real dialogue.
Okay, let's just say you're playing something really vacuous.
Like Angry Birds or something.
Yes,
like
you're playing Angry Birds.
I will say that a board game is higher than another form of game like that.
Yeah.
That is just kind of mind-numbing. But I'd say chess or checkers or something that takes some strategy would probably be a little better than just these random roll and see where you land. Kind of. That's what most board games seem like they are. You know, but like checkers or chess is more of an intellectual endeavor, you know, a strategic endeavor, as is cards. Yeah. I mean, I prefer games like that.
Certain kinds of card games are.
Well, yeah, like gin, stuff like that. Even poker is. I mean, it's not all luck. I mean, but it's, you know, I think those are more human in a sense. But I'm all for the big plasma screen in the corner, and you put a film on, and four or five people sit around and watch a movie together and talk about it afterwards. I mean, technology has a role of this. But I was at a friend's house here in town.
But wait. But wouldn't you say that that's a slightly lower form of making your own fun than Karol Wojtyla with his friends in the basement of this house somewhere in Krakow?
Oh, you're using my event against me, aren't you?
Right.
No,
writing their own plays and performing them in candlelight.
Yeah, but what they were doing, point taken, but what they were doing was really something that should have been on a stage in an event. They just didn't want to get a shot in the head from the Nazis. So that's what they were doing it at home, is because they would get killed for it. But, yeah, point taken, that's a really high urbane kind of entertainment. But I think that there's something to be said for great film. I think that the art form of film, which is inherently technological, you can tell a story with film that you can't always tell even with literature or with a play.
Okay, so
and I think that's worthwhile. I think it's a beautiful, and I think the communal experience of that is a very valid thing to do, whether it's at home or whether it's in a theater.
Okay, but I want to backtrack a little bit to use the word entertainment, which I think is a very new concept, a very 20th century concept, this idea of entertainment. Now, it's true that there were entertainments that happened before that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Shakespeare, for example, right? Or other
the circus.
Plays. Mm-hmm. The circus, right?
the games in Rome.
The games in Rome. Or if you think of, you know, like an ancient Near Eastern monarch sitting there eating grapes and dates and watching some sort of juggler or whatever.
The fool.
Entertaining, right?
I think of myself as the court jester of this podcast.
You are kind of like the court jester of this podcast. But the point of this
You're the king, and I get away with mocking you and kidding you because that's my job.
Entertainment was something for people who were wealthy and had leisure,
mm-hmm.
or it was something that would be maybe done for the masses as a kind of way to appease them or whatever. But now entertainment is something that's almost like all-encompassing. It's something like you try to do every day almost as like therapy or something.
Well, I don't know. I think that even
people watch like 4 hours of TV a day or something.
I think
crazy
that the peasant family that finishes up dinner and it takes a lot longer to cook it and a lot longer to finish it because you have to boil water to do the dishes and all that stuff. And you get that all done. And I think then dad brings out his old fiddle, like on Little House on the Prairie or something, and he plays a song and one of the daughters sings it and everyone claps when it's done. I mean, that's a pretty common, almost daily kind of occurrence in a typical home historically, isn't it? I mean, some form of...
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. I've only lived as an only child with busy parents and Gen X. I don't know how people live.
Yeah, well, no, I
grew up in front of the television.
But it does go back to the idea of, you know, leisure as the basis of culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Joseph Pieper, for those of you who haven't read it, go read it. Leisure, the Basis of Culture.
Run. Don't walk to Amazon and buy Leisure, the Basis of
Culture. But,
and everything Pieper ever wrote.
But that kind of idea of the nuclear family or the community having this kind of communal entertainment that we're making ourselves,
mm-hmm.
right, that's not being provided for us from the outside, I think mm-hmm. is really powerful and valuable. It's a communal experience of making. So here's, I think, the major distinction that I would like to make in this Make Your Own Fun podcast is between watching and making, right? So much entertainment nowadays is about watching or being watched, right? Being on a stage or watching somebody on a stage, whether that stage is a plasma screen or an iPhone or a physical stage, it's all about watching somebody do something. But I feel like what we're maybe suggesting is a better way is this idea of making your own fun together, right? Mm-hmm. As a kind of communal experience of making, which I think can happen on a very low level in the context of like a board game or a card game, but on a much higher level in something like communal singing.
Or even just people, there's times when I go home at night and I am absolutely exhausted. I don't even want to cook. And I end up just gelling out in front of the television and watching a couple of episodes of Walking Dead and then going to sleep or something. And there's nights that I go home, I cook myself something, have a glass of wine, I kind of got some energy, and the laptop comes out and I start working on my book. And I kind of get actually lost in writing narrative and rewriting sections of narrative, and I look up and it's 10:30, 11 o'clock, and I've been working for a while. And so even on that personal level like that, making, being a pleasant thing, is an extension of what it means to be human, which is what that whole panel that we did this last weekend was about.
You know, it makes me think of this old guy I knew who did wood carving as his hobby. He was a dentist. And back in his day, dentists would make their own implements and things to put in people's mouths. Now they all send everything off to a lab, and the lab does it. But it used to be that they would do it himself. So he transferred that professional skill to his hobby in wood carving. But anyway, there are lots of things we could talk about that we could make this podcast hours and hours long and make our own fun forever and ever. But all good things must come to an end. And this is the end of the Over the Counter podcast. I'm Mark Eastcheck.
And I'm Andrew Whaley, and I'm fun.